This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Greeley, one team like the UNC Bears, and one bank who cheers as loud as you do. Bank of Colorado, proud partner of UNC Athletics, member FDIC.
Horrifying news story.
I don't know if this is the kind of hard-hitting news you're used to.
Got some good news and I got some bad news.
Now this could be the big story of the summer. Network is going to be wanting plenty of coverage.
What do you mean silly? I mean that's real news.
Running backs continue to get paid. The emergence of running backs being very well taken care of, I suppose, and starred and highlighted. Detroit Lions 3-time Pro Bowler Jahmyr Gibbs has received a contract extension that makes him now the highest paid running back in NFL history. Gibbs and the Lions reached an agreement Thursday on a 3-year, $67.5 million deal that could be worth up to $75 million and includes $51.5 million guaranteed, according to agent Todd France of Athletes First. He announced that on Instagram. So this record deal now surpasses the contract extension of Bijan Robinson, who signed with the Falcons earlier this week. The extension is for 3 years and $66 million, almost $67 million. Could be worth up to $75 million. That's crazy. The $22.25 million average annual value of Robinson's contract made him the NFL's third running back to get more than $20 million per year in an extension, along with the Indianapolis Colts, Jonathan Taylor at 22, and the Eagles, Saquon Barkley at 20.6. So there you go. You got Jahmyr Gibbs, Bijan Robinson, Jonathan Taylor, Saquon Barkley all making over $20 million a year. Christian McCaffrey is just shy of that. He's at 19. But it's cool to see, man. I love a good running back. I think it's over the years, 20 years or so, you've seen the running backs. They're good for a little bit, and then they kind of fade. But got a handful of guys now that are just absolute difference makers, and Jahmyr Gibbs is definitely one of those dudes.
You know, this whole less money for running backs came, I think, my opinion, this started when you started having two backs. Instead of just the one Terrell Davis guy, you had that 1-2 hit.
That, and a couple things. Running backs are having a hard time playing much past 29 and 30. Also, the rule changes in the NFL definitely catered to receivers getting calls and cornerbacks having not getting benefits of the benefit of the doubt much on coverage. And the way they changed the rules back in, 2003? Back when it was, hey, you used to be able to bump a receiver down the field until the ball was in the air, and then they changed it to you could bump him initially at the, for 5 yards, and then you got a release. So that obviously, that lended itself to offenses being able to put up bigger numbers, quarterbacks throwing the ball more and more. But I like this emphasis. I do. I think it's great for the NFL. Rams coach Sean McVay said Thursday he doesn't have an answer to whether Aaron Donald will come out of retirement this season, but added that the former All-Pro defensive tackle looked outstanding during his workout with the team on Tuesday. He said he worked out at their Loyola Marymount University workout in Los Angeles on an off day during training camp. His session was with defensive line coach Gifts Smith, along with Senior Vice President of Sports Medicine and Performance Reggie Scott and Senior Director of Strength and Conditioning Justin Lovett. McVay said he's very deliberate and intentional about what this looks like. Things are going in the right direction. He's feeling good, but we're not to where we are able to say whether or not he is or isn't ready to do it. But he's doing great, and he looked outstanding, as I think all of us would expect. Can you imagine if Aaron Donald does come back and he's still, what is he, 35 years old? He still comes back and can play at a high level. And you got Myles Garrett, too. The Rams are already kind of one of the favorites to win the Super Bowl this year. That certainly, again, that's a big if Donald comes back and if he can still play at that elite level at the age of 35.
And if he can stay healthy at the age of 35.
Andy Reid said that Patrick Mahomes has participated in every part of training camp, but he will likely not have him play in the team's preseason opener next week against the Los Angeles Rams. He said, there's a pretty good chance where I don't play him. I can see why. He said the percentages are leading that way. I don't know if I'll play him in the second or third game. I just don't know that. The percentages probably lean against not doing that. So I still believe he's going to play in week one. I think the NFL knew he was going to play in week one. That's why he scheduled that Broncos-Chiefs game week one at Arrowhead. So I think I would bet on Patrick Mahomes playing that game. Here's an interesting one from Ross Dellinger, and I talked about it briefly. Per the amendment in the Protect College Sports Act obtained by Yahoo Sports, if a Power League school wants to move to another power conference, the school can avoid the 5-year probationary period if it withdraws from its league within 180 days of the bill's enactment. That, to me, if this goes through, I think we're going to see 180 days of just even more wild, 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 wild west. I think this is going to throw things for a loop. I mean, it might be real chaos there. Because you'd have to, this is your one chance to do it without facing some kind of 5-year probationary period. And listen, I like that. Let's stop jumping conferences. Let's try to really build up some real rivalries, multiple rivalries throughout the country, rather than teams jumping ship all the time. This is my question: is what is the Pac-12? What are they considered? Are they a G5? Are they officially? Like, what makes you officially not a Power 4 conference? Or are they stuck somewhere in between?
I think they need to prove themselves. The teams that they have right now, there are
G5. What are they? Is that what is this conference classified as right now?
I'd say G5.
So G6?
Yeah. They would be a G because they only have two teams that are used to being in a power conference.
So if Boise State, for example, decides they want to leave because they get some kind of hint that maybe they could go to the Big 12 or something, they wouldn't be punished with this probationary period. They wouldn't. There would be, because I think the leap up into a Power 4 conference, they're not going to hurt anyone. It's not going to mess with you. So
yeah,
it's just
if you
cross over from one power conference to the other.
I think there is a stark difference between the top three, maybe the top four. But CSU has had a bad recent history, so
no,
I'm not going to count them.
It's hard to classify them as a power four.
There is a stark difference between the top three when they are at their best and everybody else when they are at their best. I could see Washington State going to the playoffs if they had a good year and a good coach. I could see Oregon State do that. I can see Boise going to the playoffs this year.
I don't know about any other team. The front runner. GoPoke says they've more or less dropped power in G6 and mainstream media. I don't know that I agree with that. I've seen enough Power 4 or whatever, Autonomous 4. Does it matter? We know what it is. We know the SEC, the Big Ten, the Big 12, and the ACC are the big dogs, and the rest are just kind of, just hanging out. Big Hub says CSU, Utah State, Texas State, Fresno State, and even San Diego State have to prove themselves. Boise State already has done that. Oregon State and Wazoo already were Power 5 to begin with.
I think CSU is going to prove. I think you're going to have a top four heavy.
You think CSU is going to
be
in that top
four, and then everybody else is a donut.
You think CSU is going to end up in this top four?
I think so, because they have a good coach with proven history. If he can get some cooperation from the athletics department, which I think they will, I think they'll be top four.
Well, and you didn't feel this way when they hired Jay Norvell.
No.
You didn't feel this way when they hired Steve Addazio.
No.
This is like an actual home run get for CSU, for Jim Mora. And I think that, I don't think it's underrated. We've been certainly talked about it a lot recently. I think even big names in the league were shocked that Jim Mora went to CSU. Like Nick Saban. Nick Saban was shocked. He's like, I don't know why he'd go there. He said that on ESPN.
Yeah,
I don't know why he'd go there. Well, it's a path to the playoffs for him. If he goes to Oklahoma State or whatever, you got a lot of work to do to just even be relevant in a conference like that. If you're as good as advertised, you come to this new Pac-12 and you lead them into the new era. If he's as good as advertised,
he has three teams to worry about.
So did he?
To a bigger conference, if he went to the Big 12, you have Arizona, Arizona State, Oklahoma.
Yeah, eventually, Oklahoma and you might not State. Be given the patience to get that thing up and running. If you go to a bigger conference, so did Jim Mora kind of take the easy way out? I mean that with all due respect. At his age, I would consider doing something the same if I want to experience the playoffs again in however long he's going to do this. His best shot would be to do it in the Pac-12.
Yeah, there are certain people who I think probably lucked out. Kalen DeBoer lucked out with Washington. They were on the uptrend, and he is a good coach who turned Fresno State around. He lucked out, but you're not gonna do that in most of the time. You're not gonna do that if you go to Oklahoma State. You're gonna suck for a bit before you get there.
I think a lot of Rams fans are expecting a pretty quick turnaround for Jim Mora. Even Jim Mora says that, like, there's no real rebuild anymore in college sports. It's with the transfer portal, you've got to win in the transfer portal. And that's why I think the patience for coaches is at an all-time low, because you have more resources than you used to have, but you could always make the complaint, we don't have as many resources as the next guy. Because the old rule used to be, my rule used to be three years minimum.
That's an NFL thing now.
3 years minimum. Year one doesn't count. Year two, okay, you're starting to get an idea. We need to see a little bit of an improvement here because you're starting to get your guys in. By year three, we need to see you taking this program realistically into the right direction. Now, I don't know. Is it year one, we want to see something, and year two, we're kind of expecting you to have this thing kind of figured out. And so you get like 2 or 3 years. Now, what Coach Prime did was he had a really good year two. Year one was successful because they went from one win to four. So he bought himself some time. Year two was really good. So that extends it. Year three, bad. And we'll see what happens with year four. But it is, I have a feeling they're not going to be good. I don't know.
I think you're going to have a fairly quick turnaround with CSU. They're not going to beat Boise State anytime soon. Depending on how up and down Washington State and Oregon State are, they could leapfrog them. Not this year, but I think next year is going to be real promising for the Rams.
Yeah. Just really interested to see what this looks like for Jim Mora. Big Hub says, I think CSU will be every team. CSU beat every team in the conference.
No.
Boise State's going to be tough. I still think San Diego State. Based on UConn, this is essentially UConn's roster. So is UConn, last year's UConn version, are they beating Boise State?
No.
Maybe.
I mean, you can have a better coach make players better, but I don't think the Rams beat Boise State anytime within the next 4 years. Unless Boise goes on a real downturn, which I don't see happening. But I think maybe year three or year four, but Boise's just too powerful right now. They're going to run away with the conference, probably.
Yeah. Here's one last note I want to get to. Offensive lineman Cole Hudson Has rejoined Texas after regaining a fifth year of eligibility, the school announced Friday. He played in 48 games for the Longhorns, 23 starts at three positions. He had exhausted his eligibility last fall. He went undrafted. He participated in mini camps with Cleveland and Dallas. He did not sign a professional contract at all. In July, he filed a lawsuit against the—he was one of them— filed the lawsuit against the NCAA in Travis County, Texas, seeking an additional year of eligibility, part of a wave of players who sought another season following the NCAA's new 5-for-5 plan that gives new players a blanket 5 years of eligibility. We know all about that one. Steve Sarkisian, the head coach, said he was monitoring that situation. That was in July. I thought it was if they declared for the draft, they couldn't get in, but I guess maybe they're saying if you didn't sign any kind of a contract, even if it's just a training camp contract, then you would still be eligible.
Yeah, my thought is I'm a little iffy about the joining a team for their practice, but if you haven't signed a contract or you haven't been drafted, you should be allowed to go back.
I think I kind of stick on the if you declare for the draft, that might make players less apt to declare for the draft if they don't think, like, okay, you better get drafted.
Sucks for the high schoolers.
You better hear some situation. Good news. I don't like the idea of, okay, I'm declaring for the draft. Oh, I didn't get drafted. And now I'll just go back. And teams are already kind of moving on. Kind of screws the team over a little bit, unless you enter the portal in April. Or whatever it is. Basketball, I know, is April. Is that the same for football? I still think if you say, hey, I think I'm good enough, I'm leaving, I'm declaring for the draft, then you don't get drafted. I actually kind of like the idea of saying, I know you didn't sign a contract, but declaring for the draft is kind of like doing that. So, no, your eligibility's done.
I could understand that. But if this situation turns out to be, if you you declare for the draft, you're done in college, then I think draft grades are going to have to come out quicker because these guys are going to have to make a decision. Do I go back for my fifth year, my fourth year, fifth year? And like, if you're sixth round, seventh round, you could be an unsigned free agent.
Yeah. 22 minutes after the hour. Let's take a quick break here. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk. We'll go deep into the Denver Broncos injury updates. Marvin Mims is now on that list. Apparently he just headed off the field with the trainers. So we'll talk to Benjamin, get the gist of any real injury news and just how the team's looking thus far. Keep it here on the whole show. We'll be right back.
Good morning, NOCO has their eyes on the skies this summer. Here, Denver and Front Range Weather's Cody Wilson on the show for the latest local forecast on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Steve Fairchild at FairchildQBTraining.com, and you are listening to the whole show on 1310 KFKA.
We finally made it to Friday, but I want you to put this in your notebook, your whole show notebook that you no doubt carry. Brunch at Big City Roadhouse tomorrow and Sunday, every single weekend, Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Breakfast burritos, breakfast burgers, chicken and waffles. You're going to love it. I've never had a bad meal there. $5 mimosas, $6 house-made Bloody Marys. This food just looks delicious. And Big City Roadhouse, that's the place to go. That's the place to go watch the games, too. They have all these great, gigantic TVs now. They got the massive ones they put up above the bar now. When you go in, there's not a bad seat in the house to watch the game. So make that your NFL college football watching headquarters this upcoming fall. You probably were over there last night watching the first preseason game, which was actually really good. A lot of fun. Enjoyed myself watching that game.
Yay, football's returned.
Yeah, that's right, Michael. And I'm just ready to start seeing what this is all about. I think the Broncos are, they got a really tough schedule. I'm just ready to see what this team is like in year three with Bo Nix. And, you know, Sean Payton, since he got here, joining forces with George Payton, those two guys have no doubt turned this thing around. Ownership group has been great, and I know there's a lot of people about these personal seat license things, and I'm seeing stuff online. Oh, the owners are showing their colors. They don't care about the fans. They're building a new stadium. They're building a brand new, shiny stadium for you. The owners have turned this thing around. They've made everything top-notch around their facilities and paying people, keeping people on staff, what they did for Davis Webb to keep him here. I'm not one of those guys. I'm not turning on. It's a business at the end of the day. You know, you want to win games. It's great for the fans and stuff. But you still, when I get pissy with owners, it's when we get into lockout talk. That's where I get a little upset, because I think as an owner of a team, it's your mission to make sure you're playing the sport. And that was that whole thing years and years ago when we did have a mini lockout. I think we missed the Hall of Fame game several years ago. But I, at the end of the day, you don't just buy a team for funsies because you like football and you want to see what it's all about. It's a real business, and you're trying to make this thing make a lot of money so that you can keep that business rolling. So upon further examination, the more information we get about these PSLs or whatever, You're basically gonna, you're charging people that are already going to your games a little bit more. And like you said, they're not doing a blanket. It's not like a blanket tax raise or any, to my knowledge, at least. They are building the stadium, but it costs money to do that. And they want to continue making that money. I think we had some good texters earlier. It's like billionaires, that if they operate that way, they're not probably billionaires for long. So they have to be kind of ruthless. So I don't really have an issue with it. Benjamin Albright, host of Broncos Country Tonight, coming up next. The latest on all things injury related. We're just seeing a bunch of little things right now. It doesn't seem like, knock on wood, anything massive, but Marvin Mims is the most recent one. So we'll catch up with Benjamin, get the latest on that. But first, let's jump out and get the latest on the local sports flash.
In Colorado, local matters. It matters who you trust, who knows your name, and who's rooted right here in our state. I'm Sean Ostoff, president of Bank of Colorado, and we're staying grounded in the same values we've built on for generations. At Bank of Colorado, we stay true to what matters most: local decisions, real relationships, and communities we call home. If you're ready for a bank built for Colorado and committed to it, choose Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
Hey, everybody. This is former CSU running back Kyle Bell, and you are listening to my main man, Brady Hull, on The Hull Show. Do not turn your dial. Keep it right here.
Welcome back into The Hull Show, talking all things Denver Broncos and training camp with our guy and Broncos insider, host of Broncos Country Tonight, Benjamin Albright, here to set the record straight. I just, you know, what I'm seeing, Benjamin, is a bunch of little kind of nicks, injuries, not I don't want to say injuries, but some bumps and bruises. This is one of the great reasons we love to bring you on, to help us out. Anything we should be worried about on the injury front?
Well, Matt Henningsen was carted off today, so that would be worrisome. Most of the other stuff has just been minor bumps and bruises, that kind of stuff. We had muscle tightness with Jalen Waddle. We had a little minor thing with Cortland Sutton. He's back out there. We had Nick Benito with a little bit of a lower leg thing. But out of an abundance of caution, they're trying to take extra days to make sure guys are perfectly healthy. They don't re-aggravate something. They feel like this is a Super Bowl caliber team, and they're taking every precaution to make sure guys don't accidentally further aggravate things.
Yeah, that would be bad news. Sean Payton leaving for the Hall of Fame ceremony. He doesn't want to come back on Sunday to any massive injury news.
Well, right. That's one of those things. You know, you just do the best you can with what you got and go with it. And, you know, he's obviously going out there to help induct Drew Brees. Talked to Rich DeRoziers from the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and he said that that speech is supposed to be a pretty good one. So I hope all the Broncos fans tune in and get a chance to watch that.
Yeah, no question about it. Hey, fun preseason game last night, Benjamin. You know, a lot of people, some people get just pumped up that we have football back on the tube again, and others are like, yeah, call me when the regular season starts. But hey, for game one, that was a blast.
Yeah, for for a bunch of third stringers and future insurance salesmen, we got a lot of points on the board. That was a lot of fun, right? We had drama there at the end. It was it was a lot of fun, and so I think I liked it. I saw a tweet floating around about it's a Hall of Fame game, everybody's excited, and then 20 minutes in they're turning the TV off, and that felt like the coldest of takes. You know, when it comes to that, we love football, and you know, if you love football, you're watching football. If you don't love football, okay, cool, whatever. But don't say you love football and then you don't love football when it's on.
Yeah, maybe I'm not like every single play diving in on, you know, oh my gosh, this guy, pay attention to that guy. Probably not me, but I have it on and I'm watching in the intense moments, and that was a fun football game to watch. So yeah, if you're a football fan, odds are that thing was on until we reached the conclusion.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I mean, that's the thing. So it gives everybody a chance to kind of get back in the swing of things. We have a shorter preseason now, so there's not as many of these games to complain about. You know, it's meaningless and all that kind of stuff, which is sort of fascinating because, you know, in the preseason, everything matters except the final score. You know, the regular season, nothing matters but the final score. And so, you know, when you're in the evaluation phase, you're a guy that's trying to make a team. You know, you need these reps, you need these games to try to get out there and showcase that you can do it.
Benjamin Albright joining us, host of Broncos Country tonight. Sean Payton spoke a little bit about Jonah Coleman. I'm really interested to see what year one is going to look like for him. What have you seen from Coleman at this point?
Well, he's certainly a capable receiver out of the backfield. I would say that he's a better runner than R.J. Harvey. And that's, you know, I'm sure that's not saying much, but, Harvey has been a great receiver out of the backfield, but Coleman's a more natural runner. He's been a running back a longer time. He was a wide receiver in high school, got converted to running back, and then he was a running back in college. R.J. Harvey was a quarterback, even into college, who converted to running back late, you know, in his collegiate career. And so, you know, I think Coleman just has more reps and understands that the running back position with a more natural affinity. I think he's going to be a big time contributor this year. I don't think that they're going to have the brakes on him or anything. You may not see him some of the early games as far as that goes, but you know, I think what they want to do is rotate things in an effort to kind of keep J.K. Dobbins fresh. So you don't run into a situation like last year where Dobbins was really your most successful weapon on offense, and then you ground him down and he got hurt. So, I expect Coleman to have some chunks where he's very active. I just don't know if it's going to be immediately.
Do you think if you had to predict halfway through the season, Coleman leapfrogs R.J. Harvey at number two?
I don't know if they have a running back.
Doesn't really matter.
Yeah. They've got a running back one in Dobbins, right? But the other guys are all like role players. Like, you know, Tyler Bidet was like the pass blocking guy, and R.J. Harvey was like the pass catching guy, and they kind of have these niche roles. And I think Coleman can do more roles. I still think Harvey's going to have a big impact out there as like the Reggie Bush style, you know, running back catching the ball out of the backfield. But I think Coleman will have more rushing yards than he will this year.
Benjamin, to quote the great Michael Scott from The Office, I'm sure you're a fan. I am not superstitious, but I am a little stitious. When I hear J.K. Dobbins pinky swearing, I don't know, did he pinky swear you, the media, that he'd play all 17 games? I get a little scared of that kind of thing, man. I'm not into like voodoo, witch doctor stuff, but that worries me a bit, that you just don't want to mess with football karma.
Well, first of all, that Michael Scott quote is legendary, and I want to acknowledge that you brought that out.
Yeah,
second of all, I don't know. I mean, yes, he did pinky swear directly to me and looked me in the eye, so I'm expecting that beer. If he's not there for all 17 games, I'm going to collect on that. But, I don't know, man. You're talking about a guy with just a lengthy injury history at a position that gets roughed up during a football season. I don't know if holding to all 17 games is realistic, but if he makes it through 80% of the season, or, you know, he only misses 2-3 games at various different points, I think we're counting that as a win.
So what do you even do? I mean, I know these teams, they have amazing trainers. They get paid good money to try to keep these guys healthy. But I mean, what do you do? There's not really much you can do to try to prevent injuries, especially, you know, toward a guy that's had a bunch of them throughout his entire football career.
I think you try to find a way to rotate things, you know. I think you try to find a way where he's a high usage back one week, and then you try to maybe ease off of it the next week, you know. I think you try to find ways to rotate your running back room. And I'm not saying that you create specific game plans for each running back for But yeah, kind of. You know, you find ways to to make sure that guys can kind of keep their body as healthy as possible throughout the season. Do what it takes if they've got an aggravation or something like that to make sure they don't exacerbate that aggravation. And I think you some of it is just crossing your fingers and hoping, and maybe you go to be a little suspicious at that point.
on the wide receiver side of things, you said it, like nothing major at this stage to worry about with Jalen Waddle. Sounds like Sutton is rolling. And again, I always think it's a good sign when we're having most of our conversations about the Broncos, we're not really concerned about starters. You know, most of those guys have those positions locked up. We're more focused. We're going down the depth chart looking, okay, who's going to be that third wide receiver? Pat Bryant, we keep hearing a lot about. You mentioned Marvin Mims. Who do you think is going to be kind of the third guy to benefit from this Jalen Waddle addition?
Well, I think if camp's been any indication so far, we need to break out our movie ratings and rate that third wide receiver position PB13. Opponents strongly cautioned because Pat Bryant's been taken over, and so I love what Mims brings to the table. Unfortunately, they just don't use him as much as they should, and then for whatever reason, Troy Franklin and Lil Jordan Humphrey are still around because they have blackmail photos on someone. But as far as the rest of it goes, I think Bryant's looked really good, and he is the eventual successor to Cortland Sutton. I think that's a very encouraging sign for him so far.
Benjamin Albright joining us, host of Broncos Country Tonight. On the defensive side of the ball, it just seems like this group is set. I know replacing John Franklin Myers was kind of a story, and it is a story. But, man, I mean, how tough is it going to be, though? You're bringing everybody back almost. We're still waiting to see what the Jonathan Cooper thing looks like. But to repeat what you've done the last two seasons with this defense, I mean, they did get better. I mean, Hufanga's ridiculous. But just how difficult is that going to be? How much pressure is there on this defense to do it again for a third year in a row?
Well, I mean, it's difficult for any team to repeat anything in the NFL, right? There's so many moving parts, the luck, the nature of injury, all that kind of stuff. The fact that Broncos have been relatively healthy 2 years in a row is darn near miraculous. So three is kind of, eye-opening. But the good news is, the offense is looking a little bit better. So maybe the defense doesn't have to carry the freight as much. And if the offense can put, points on the board earlier in games, well, that means the defense is going to be able to pin their ears back a little bit. You already saw what this defense could do in terms of sack totals the last 2 years. Imagine getting more opportunities to do that because teams are throwing to catch up with you. So I think if the offense can carry its freight, find ways to, with Davis Webb, to modernize this thing, get points on the board quicker, then I think we're in for a pretty good run here.
And kind of transitioning back to the offensive side with Davis Webb, you mentioned, I asked you last week, if you've seen any real indicators of a Davis Webb, led offense here. I heard the comment about Sean Payton that said, hey, he'd certainly be giving suggestions and mandates to Davis Webb. I don't know, man. That hit my ear wrong. Kind of like, wait a second, is he really giving the keys over, or how is that going to look?
Well, I think those of us that know that Sean Payton's air quotes decision to give the play calling to Davis Webb was not an organic one, but one that was rather dictated to him, even if he's pretending that's not the case. Him having his thumb on the scale is not surprising if he knows Sean Payton. So there's that. But I will say that Webb looks like he's modernized some things. The offense uses a lot more motion. They play with more tempo at practice. Two things that have been sorely lacking from the offense the last couple of years. Sean Payton's offense, I think he's a great play designer, but there are elements of it that have been archaic. And I think that hopefully Davis Webb and him bringing these suggestions to the table and running the thing will help modernize some aspects of it.
How does that work on game day? Is Sean relaying something to Davis Webb first, Davis Webb going to Sean first, or is this Davis Webb is in control with that microphone? Because I'm guessing Sean's still going to have the playbook and everything. Is there a fear that can get sloppy and maybe even lead to delay of game or just not getting things in, sharply?
Well, I mean, that's part of the impetus behind Davis Webb having the play calling title in the first place, is because Sean Payton's getting, frankly, old and slow and relaying things in, and Bo Nix is getting real frustrated with it. And so I think ideally Davis Webb is going to be the primary play caller. I don't know how much Sean's going to have his thumb on the scale. We'll see. I think the idea is that Davis Webb's just calling plays and that he's relaying them in. And, that's the idea here. Now, Webb's going to be on the sideline and not up in the booth, so that's an interesting wrinkle there. But we'll have to see how that goes, and we'll have to see it in games before we can really, you know, really make comment on that.
One more kind of overall AFC West question for you. I saw, you know, Andy Reid saying there's a decent chance we don't see Patrick Mahomes in the preseason. What are you hearing as far as Week One against the Broncos? Are you thinking Patrick Mahomes is going to be a go for that game?
Yeah, he's a full go for that game. Yeah. That was something we've known for a little while. I mean, I know they went out and got the other guy, but nobody's scared of Justin Field goals. And so, I think end of the day, it's unless Mahomes re-injures himself, he is absolutely the guy Week One.
All right, my friend Benjamin, great work as always. Love your coverage, and we'll look to catch up with you next Friday.
Absolutely, brother. Take care.
All right, man. Benjamin Albright, host of Broncos Country Tonight. Well, I guess it was kind of like I've been saying Patrick Mahomes is going to play. But there are some of those, there are people out wondering, you know, hey, what happens throughout these next few weeks? Is he a full go? Reed saying as much that, yeah, he's been in everything when it comes to training camp, but we're probably not going to put him out there in the preseason, which I wouldn't either. Mahomes has been there a long enough time now where you don't need to risk that. I think the same could honestly be said for the Broncos. I wouldn't be terribly shocked. Training camp, one thing. Keeping Bo practicing every day, I think, is important, but I wouldn't be terribly shocked if they decide to say, we don't need to see Bo in the preseason. I'm not saying he doesn't have more work to do, but maybe that's an unnecessary risk.
If he goes past two full quarters, maybe three full quarters in total, I would be surprised because they're not going to play him in that third game.
No.
They're probably going to give him a full quarter in this first game. Maybe, you know, a full quarter in the second one, but I don't see him doing much.
Yeah.
You want to preserve his health. People are a little worried.
I'm not even going to be upset if he doesn't play at all. I don't even think I know you got Jalen Waddle, you got Davis Webb. Maybe that's where you want to see some of those kinks ironed out. But if they were to announce that, hey, we're going to slow play this thing, we're not going to risk it.
We're the Rams.
It doesn't bug me that much. I guess I could see both sides where you would say, well, we want him to be out there and get the in-game feel with Davis Webb, but apparently these guys are tight and they know they have obviously worked together closely for the last couple of years. So there's a part of me that just wouldn't be shocked at all if they decide to say, yeah, let's not mess with the preseason or get him out there for a series or two in that first game and then call it good. 12:49 the time. We'll wrap up hour number two. We still have clip of the day. We'll take a deep dive into the Los Angeles Chargers. Just how will this Harbaugh-McDaniel dynamic work? You got two interesting football minds, but two kind of different football minds. Will the Chargers finally win a playoff game this year with Justin Herbert? He's the best quarterback in the league that hasn't won a playoff game. So we'll get to that coming up next. Keep it here. It's Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 at 1310 KFKA.
Did you know you can hear your favorite KFKA shows anytime?
Ooh, anytime that you want me.
Find podcasts of Good Morning NoCo, Coach Speak, and the whole show on Apple, Spotify, or 1310KFKA.com.
Hi, this is Terry Fry, author, journalist, screenwriter, and you're listening to Brady Hull on the whole show, 1310KFKA.
Renaissance Insurance Group, formed by two UNC Bears alumni over 20 years ago. They've always had our backs. They specialize in risk management, commercial, and personal insurance needs for Weld and Larimer County and are the go-to for workers' compensation and farming operations. Do not lose what you've been working so hard for. Call Ryan at Renaissance Insurance, 970-674-8825. Team-Rig, R-I-G, team-rig.com. All right, coming up in the final hour of the show, we'll get to the clip of the day. I have two clips of the day, both around two big-time legends, both the Broncos and the Nuggets, something surrounding that. And then we'll take a deep dive into more AFC West stuff this week. Today, we're looking at the Los Angeles Chargers, and then I'll give you my picks, how I think the AFC West will be won. At the end of the show, picture on Friday. Everybody knows that. Good. I almost said goodnight, Northern Colorado. We're not done yet, Mike. We got another hour. Stay with us here. Clip of the day coming up next.
This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Greeley, one team like the UNC Bears, and one bank who cheers as loud as you do. Bank of Colorado, proud partner of UNC Athletics, member FDIC.